morning, everybody. Bill Handel on a... Sorry about that. A little froggy this morning. Saturday morning. And it's... temperature out there. It's not going to be as warm as it was or as warm as Monday. But, you know, waking up this morning and coming in, the skies are gray. And it's not because it's overcast. And the ash on the car. And yesterday the breathing was horrible. Although it was pretty good today as I woke up. Coming in, it wasn't bad. A little bit fresh, but I'm sure over the next couple of hours. Also, the moon's out. It's bright orange. How about that? Or was that the sun? I think it was the moon. The sun. You are the sun and the moon to me. Okay. A quick hello. Layla, morning.
Hey, Bill. Good morning.
Good. I'm going to rename you. Layla Lipschitz Mohammed.
What?
Mother Jewish, father Muslim. What do you think?
Wonderful. Hey, I saw you walk in and shut the blinds. Sir, the sun's not going to come through the window.
Oh, you know, I do that for anybody sitting there.
Oh, that's sweet, but I don't think we have that problem.
All right, I'll bring them back up.
No,
again.
It's okay. You're fine.
I don't mind because there's such glare.
It is.
Usually
glare,
coming in, depending on the time of year, where it's blinded. And it really has nothing to do with the person behind the glass. Lately, it has more to do with me being able to see what's going on. So it's really about me. But then it all, but it always is, isn't it?
It is.
It absolutely is. All right, Jake, our engineer, capo de tutto, who runs everything.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Morgan, our starving student who works here at iHeart, and her restaurant job is non-existent because she ran both jobs, worked at both jobs. So if you'd like to know the dumpster she lives in, I will be more than happy to share that address with you all together. No, actually, I think you, Morgan, you have roommates, right?
I do. I have two roommates.
Two? Yeah. Come on. So you originally said like 18 to make it work out.
Well, COVID's taken a lot of them out.
Yeah, it certainly has. All right. Phone numbers for marginal legal advice, 800-520-1534, 800-520-1534. Also, if you are injured, handleonthelaw.com is our website. And what ends up happening on the website, incidentally, if people call in and they're not happy or lawyers not referring or is not responding, I get a phone call and then they get a phone call. And so there's always that. 800-520-1534 is the number to call. Top of the hour, always the best time to call because we have lines open. All right, good enough. Where's my stories here? Here we go. This is Handel on the Law. Bill Handel here, making your life miserable, giving you marginal advice and telling you you have absolutely no case. And hopefully we'll have a whole series of you have absolutely no case when we go through the stories. Depressing me is when you do have a case. Like, oh, okay, you got a case. Yeah. But no case, I just love it. All right, you guys ready to go? Here we go. The Tiger King. You ever see The Tiger King? I think everybody did. This is Joe Exotic. I mean, just the most bizarre case you could ever imagine. He ran this tiger sanctuary where people paid money, and he raised tigers, and he sold tiger cubs illegally, I might add. Because people end up buying little tiger cubs because they're so cute. And then they realize they grow up. Those tigers tend to eat them and their families. Anyway, so he has been in a death fight with this woman, Carol Baskin, who killed her husband or is accused of killing her husband. And then it was a murder for hire plot against her. He's doing 22 years in jail. It was a series on Netflix that the whole country was absolutely riveted to. He got 22 years, as I said, for the murder for hire plot. And he has asked the president for a pardon and said, please be my hero. The president has helped out his friends and helped out people that work for him with pardons and commutations. So Joe Exotic said, listen, you're my hero. I support you. Please pardon me. The problem is that the president isn't really close to Joe Exotic. So that's not going to happen. Not anytime in this lifetime. It's just if you ever have a chance to see it, I don't know if it's still streaming on Netflix. And if it is, it is worth it. It is. It's a car crash is what it is. It's a crime scene. You cannot take your eyes off of this at all. All right. Let's go ahead and take a phone call or two, starting with Bob. Hello, Bob. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
I had a statute of limitations about to run out on a car wreck. They're going to sue me for extra cash for injuries. How much time do I get to respond to that?
Oh, it's the normal time. It's as if they sued you 2 days after the car crash. So you get 30 days to respond. They have, when the statute runs, they have to file the lawsuit, not serve you. Serving you comes later. And they usually have just a great deal of time. The only time that that runs out is you go into court and you say, hey, they haven't served me. They filed the lawsuit. They have to serve me. And then the judge will either give a continuance or whatever. Or there's a statutory time that says someone has to be served within X number of days. But also keep in mind, a lot of people evade service. And once the lawsuit is filed and let's say the plaintiff is trying to sue you and you're evading service, you're not going to be able to evade to run that out. Or let's say you leave the country. That tolls the statute, too. So the important issue here is the filing of the lawsuit. And they have right up until the last day of the statute. And if they don't file, Bob, you're off the hook. Tell me about the accident that they're theoretically suing you for.
My wife hit a guy on a motorcycle in the intersection. There was no police report and no witnesses. And they're saying that the money that the insurance company is going to offer is not enough.
Well, this is – and how much is the insurance company – what are the limits of the insurance that you have?
For injury, $20,000.
$20,000. All right. How badly was the guy banged up?
Not at all. I don't see it. He said he hurt his knee.
Okay, and they're not and the insurance company offered the full amount or just a nominal amount?
Just the 20.
They offered the 20.
Yeah.
They offered the 20 even though you think he wasn't injured at all.
I don't think he was injured.
And how did they produce medical reports. You know that, medical records. The insurance companies don't offer to write $20,000 without proof that you're injured. Where on what assumption do you say he's not injured?
Well, the motorcycle just barely hit the bumper on the car.
Yeah, did he fly off?
And he didn't even fall down.
They just barely hit, and he didn't fall down, and he was fine. And the insurance company is offering him $20,000, and he's saying that's not enough.
That's it.
Yeah, great. All right, that's a good story. All right, thank you. Boy, sometimes there's just credibility. So you barely tap someone, don't fall off the motorcycle, no damage, and the insurance company is willing to write you $20,000. Insurance companies. You've heard me talk about insurance companies before. We're getting money out of insurance company is literally like pulling nails out with your teeth. All right. Let's go ahead and take a break. Why not? This is Handle on the Law. If you're injured and need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI. AM 640. More stimulating talk.
And welcome back to Handle on the Law, marginal legal advice. Angie, let's go to you. Hello, Angie. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Thank you. I live in a mobile home park. I have to own the home I live in. I've been here 10 years. In order to move in, I had to go through a certain qualifying process as to age and income, etc. I would like to move into a different home in the park and the buying it, you know, the whole thing. And the park manager is not allowing escrow to close.
Interesting. And why? What's the reason?
She just says that I can't do it.
Well, no, there has to be a reason. She can't just say, I don't want you to do it. I mean, you're purchasing another property, right? You're I don't think she can do that. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And this is the park manager, right?
This is the park manager.
Do you have access to the owner of the park?
Well, I have access to her boss, not the owner.
All right. And have you contacted the boss?
No, I wanted to be sure I was on firm ground.
Yeah, I think so.
She can't legally do this.
You know, I don't know if she can. Depends.
To live here.
Yeah, it depends on what her reasons are. And for her to arbitrarily say, I just don't want her to move, what do you think her boss is going to say?
What she's saying is that if I buy another property, she has to approve the person who's going to move into it. But since I'm already approved to live here, I don't see how she can make that stipulation.
Well, she can certainly say she has to approve whoever comes into your property.
Yes.
But that doesn't, she can't stop you from moving in or buying into another property because you've been approved. So I don't quite.
Yeah, I'm already approved.
I understand, but I don't.
I mean, that's my point.
Yes, and I'm asking you why, other than you're telling me I don't care. I just don't want you to move in. And then the boss goes to her. Why aren't you letting Angie in? Because I don't want to.
Yeah.
I mean, would you keep someone like that on the payroll?
Well.
So go to the boss and just say, hey, what are you doing here? Now, as far as the legality is concerned, I have no idea because they're considered vehicles and it's generally a different set of rules. But, you know, you can't just arbitrarily. And that is that which, let's say there's a lawsuit. And when the judge asks her, why are you doing it? No reason, Your Honor. I just want to make her life miserable. Well, okay. I mean, you can try. But Ken, hello, Ken. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hey, Bill. I've got a mom who's, she's as old as a presidential candidate, for that matter. She's in a reverse mortgage, and all the obligations of the reverse mortgage have been fulfilled, and I'm done with California. My plan is to yank her out of there and move her with me. And I want to know if there's any problem with abandoning.
Well, I don't know what does abandoning mean?
Well, I just yank her out of there.
And that's it.
Texas,
and that's it. And just
be done with it.
And let the home lie fallow.
Correct.
No, you can't do that because then what's going to happen is they're going to foreclose on the property. They're going to sell it to get the money back. Any difference they have between the money that has been paid or the money that's owed, if there is a difference, she actually gets it. So if she just started the reverse mortgage,
No, this has been some time and money was allotted to her is
long gone. Yeah. Well, no, she can't do that without all kinds of civil liability. I mean, she's going to get sued. Mm-hmm. I mean, they'll take the house and then she'll get sued. And if she has any money, the estate will get sued. And if you're an inheritor of any money she has, you're going to get screwed. You won't get sued because you have nothing to do with it. But no, you can't just take all the money and then up and walk away and say, here you go. Here are the keys. You can't do that. There are civil liabilities. Now, if you have no money, then they can't do much to you. But you have the house. The point is you're living there for the rest of your life. And to give that up, well, you can, but the bottom line is the only issue is a financial issue. Nothing more.
Well,
that's it.
Bank basically owns the house at this point.
Yeah, but she gets to live there for the rest of her life for free. And so the bank takes it and whatever amount of money they spend on the foreclosure, because they just don't own it. I think she still holds title. So there's money at the end of it. I mean, and she gets to pay unless she has no money and is willing to say, okay, I'm broke. I'm not willing to, if I do have money, my son's not going to get any. So, I mean, there's a lot to it, much more than just, oh, I'm walking away. Cyber criminals. How much do you think your personal information is worth to cyber criminals? Online banking logins cost $35 to get. Documents and account details to commit complete identity theft is about $1,200. And the bulk of the stolen information comes from large-scale data breaches where you can't do much about it. That's what cyber criminals do. So what do you do to protect yourself? Let me suggest LifeLock. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. The dark web is that part of the internet that the bad guys use to buy and sell information. If LifeLock detects your information has been compromised, they send you an alert, even potentially compromised. If your identity is stolen, they work to fix the problem. Now, no one can prevent all identity theft or monitor every transaction, every business. But, hey, get a free dark web scan at LifeLock.com/scan with a promo code handle. That's LifeLock.com/scan, promo code handle. Save up to 25% your first year with the promo code handle. LifeLock.com/scan, promo code handle. This is Handle on the Law. Here on a Saturday morning. Welcome back to Handle on the Law, marginal legal advice where I tell you, you have no case whatsoever. Bob. Hello, Bob. Welcome. Yes, sir. Bob, let me explain how this works. You ask me a question and I try to answer it. And Bob, if you're sitting on the radio or you're nowhere near the phone, that's a problem when you're involved with a call-in show. Okay, so much for Bob. Gee, if we did this over the next half hour, I wouldn't have to talk at all, right? Crab? Is that right? No. Is that really your name, Crab with a K?
That's my nickname.
All right. How did now, other than sitting on the wrong toilet seat or being with the wrong person at the wrong time, how did you get the name Crab?
I walk sideways a lot.
Wow. That's terrific. I'm just going, wow. I mean, that's just absolutely great. I'm trying to visualize that. All right. Fair enough.
My biker nickname.
But, okay. Fair
anyway,
enough.
I got a question for you, Bill.
Sure.
It's an honor to talk to you.
Oh, thank
sir.
You. It is an honor to talk to me. I couldn't agree more. Yes.
I was involved in an accident last year in August, and we hired a lawyer because it was very horrific. It was a high-speed rear-end impact. I was sitting at a red light, and it pushed me into another car, and we all went to the hospital, and glad to be alive, actually. but anyway, our lawyer sent us a letter the August 13th that said they find out the lady rented a car that hit me, but she wasn't driving. She let her boyfriend or brother or somebody use it, and they can't find out who the lady is that rented it. And that's kind of weird to me because when I've rented cars in the past, you have to, present your driver's license and a credit card and everything. And she just kind of disappeared. And the car rental company, can I say the name?
Yeah, I don't care.
Avis.
Okay.
They are exempt from called the Graves Amendment. They can't be sued because their rental car that they rented didn't, cause the injury. The lady that rented it.
Right. No, I understand. And even when they do buy insurance, and I'm not familiar with the Graves Amendment, it's the maximum amount the insurance they carry is $1,530. The minimum, the maximum they carry is the minimum. So even if there was a liability, which there is because they rented the car, they own the car, it's $15,000. So so far, I'm looking at a story that is not panning out very well for you, Crab, and I'm assuming you were really banged up, right?
Yes.
Okay. And, so what's
I'm
your what's
still,
your
what's your in fact today.
Okay, what's your question?
My question is, our lawyer, how long does it take to finalize the case? I mean, it seems to keep going on and on.
Yeah, they do. And sometimes these cases will go on for a couple of years. But the very bad luck that you had, Crab, is you weren't hit by a UPS, a FedEx, or an Amazon truck or a Coca-Cola
truck. Well, here's the thing. She rented working for Amazon.
Whoa.
She was on
wait a sec. She was on the Amazon payroll. She was delivering for Amazon at that time.
I don't know that for a fact, but.
Well, that's critical. That's important. Said. Well, if that's the case, then you have to look at the investigation the lawyer is doing. And then the case gets very complicated. She rents a car. And then she's delivering for Amazon. I don't even know if Amazon may or may not be responsible because they may not know she rented the car. She
let the boyfriend or brother have actually hit me.
I'm not even arguing that. If Amazon knew that she didn't own the car, it was a rental or someone else was driving it, I'm sure whatever agreement she has with Amazon, they breached. So they're going to argue no liability. You can't find the person who is driving. There's minimal insurance. I mean, it's a mess. Now, do you have underinsured motorist insurance?
Oh, yeah. And we have full coverage.
How much? Well, how much? What are your limits on underinsured?
$100,000, I think.
You should be talking to your insurance company for $100,000. They should be writing you a check.
Because we hired a lawyer, they won't get involved.
Your insurance company won't get involved because you hired a lawyer?
Yeah.
No, that's impossible. That is impossible for an insurance company to say, we carry you for uninsured motorists, which means if the other side doesn't have insurance, we're going to pay up to the limits. But if you hire a lawyer, we're not going to pay you. Doesn't work that way. Something's really weird, Crab. Maybe you want to talk to another lawyer and find out what's going on, because a lot of this doesn't make any sense. So go to handleonthelaw.com and try to figure this thing out. A lot of these stories have wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. You know, things like no lawyer will take my case, or all the lawyers are in cahoots with the judge. And next door, there's a Martian who blocks my path with his spaceship. I mean, really strange stuff. All right, Pat. Hello, Pat.
Yes,
ma'am.
Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Yes, here's my question. I ordered Spectrum Cable. They came out, and after multiple attempts, it was determined that it was not possible to install it at my house, so we canceled the service. A month later, I got a bill for the equipment. I called them up, explained to him the guy took the equipment with him. They said, well, we looked it up. You don't owe anything. Matter of fact, you have a $3.95 credit. So we went on to the next month. Again, I get a bill. This continued on for a year. I continued to call. They continued to tell me I had a credit.
And you never did this. You never did this in writing via email, did you?
No, these were all phone calls.
Why do you think why would you not put that in writing? Why wouldn't you memorialize these phone calls? Because I guarantee you...
All I did was take down a name of who I was speaking
okay.
to.
Okay, well, that helps. That helps, and I'm assuming...
So I do have a log of every phone call,
good.
The date,
helps.
And a first
fair,
and last
fair
name.
Fair enough. All right, so, have you talked to someone up the food chain?
I have gone all the way to a supervisory level within the collections, because now a lawyer contacted me and said it went onto my credit, and there is a collection for a ridiculous amount of $160.
Well, that's not ridiculous. That's not very much money. But, okay.
Well, what I'm saying is ridiculous because no lawyer is going to go to court for $160. That's why it's ridiculous.
No, that's true. So, you're going to have to hire a lawyer. Now, if your credit has been destroyed and they actually file a lawsuit, then you have a good case of malicious prosecution. And punitive damage.
No, I've got the lawsuit canceled.
How?
Now I'm getting ready to buy a house.
Wait a sec. How did you get the lawsuit canceled?
Because with the last time the lawyer called, I explained to them that I've spoken to Spectrum. They admitted that it never was a debt. It never should have went to collections. And the lawyer said, okay, we're not going to call you anymore. We're not going to pursue this. I contacted Spectrum, and they said, we contacted the collection agency and told them to remove it. However, it's still there.
All right, you've got, you have to work. Okay.
You won't talk to me anymore.
And your question is what to do. You first of all, you got to put everything in email. You have to explain to the mortgage company. See, this is why emails help enormously, because if you could show you didn't owe the money and they agreed to it in writing, you can show the lender. And
Spectrum told me they would send me a letter.
Okay, well, then you have to keep on going. They told you, but you didn't send an email. You see, you're going to go and the point is you have to prove all of this. And even if you have a log of someone who you talk to, that someone may say, that's not the conversation we had. So you have to keep on going, because if this thing hits a legal issue, you're in all kinds of trouble. This is Handle on the Law.
If you're injured and need a lawyer,
go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI, AM 640.
And here we are, Bill Handle here. It is a Saturday morning, 800-520-1534. And this is KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app, just in case you didn't know that. 1-800-520-1534. Hey, Tom, welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hello, Bill. I listen to you every day during the week.
Thank you.
I received a letter from Human Resources in Florida stating that I needed to return back to work on September 8th or I would be terminated. Okay, so I called my manager here locally and told him asked him if he could accommodate me in another position because I had a previous injury.
Okay, hang on a minute. Wait, let me stop right there. Are you out because of your injury?
No.
You are out because you were furloughed.
I was furloughed.
Okay.
I was on disability. I got off disability.
Okay.
Now I went on furlough. Okay. So I called my manager, who said they couldn't accommodate me. And so on September 5th, I got an email from Human Resources Florida saying that I've been laid off / discharged. Okay. So now what I want to know is, since I wasn't terminated, I was laid off / discharged, could I still collect my unemployment?
Yeah, especially since you've been laid off, terminated. Hell yeah, you collect your unemployment. Because
no, laid off, discharged.
Well, it's the same thing. Laid off and discharged means you're no longer working there. I mean, I don't even know what discharge is, other than you're no longer working. Yeah, just another way of saying you're no longer working. We fired you. But if they didn't fire you for cause, accusing you of some wrongdoing, then you collect unemployment. You're still on unemployment.
Okay, so I didn't refuse to go back to work. I got
no, because they if you had not refused, if they say if you don't go back to work, we're going to discharge you. Now, did you was there a period of time when they told you to go back to work that you didn't go back to work and then they discharged you?
No.
Oh, you're okay then. No problem. You are absolutely fine. Yeah. Andy. Hey, Andy. Welcome.
Hey, Bill. I had a question about a vehicle purchase contract. I leased a vehicle for 3 years. And then after the lease was up, we decided to purchase it. And when we purchased it, come to find out on the contract, they had added all these features that are not on the vehicle, which adds up to about $7,000. So we contact the dealership, and they tell us they're going to play ball and give us, you know, our money back or rewrite the contract. And so they give us the runaround for about a month now. And I was just wondering if I had a case in small.
Well, hang on. Did you buy the car?
Yeah, we bought it. We chose to buy the vehicle after the lease.
Okay, and on the lease and the purchase, it says you get all of these additional items. You get these add-ons, correct?
On the lease, they're not on the lease.
But they're on the okay. I understand. But they're on the purchase agreement. The signed document under which you purchased the car after the lease says you get A, B, C, D, all of these items, and they're not on the car. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah, you got a small claim suit. Damn right. Oh, yeah.
All right, great.
Yeah, no question about that. Yeah, it's, hey, you said I'm getting all this. I never got it. What are they going to say? You did get it? You can say, look at the car. If you can find that item, good for you. Then I'll pay for it. But it's not on there. Now, their argument is you had the contract and you agreed to it. Then you go back and forth saying, yeah, but you promised they would be on there. And now your only defense is effectively you didn't read it very carefully. So there is such a thing as you waiving that you agreed to purchase it anyway. I don't know which way it goes statutorily, but I would give it to you. Because I would hold the dealership more responsible than you. This is Handle on the Law. And good morning. Bill Handel here on a Saturday morning as we go into our second hour of the legal show. Following this show is Leo Laporte, 11 to 2. And then it's going to be Neil Saavedra from 2 to 5 o'clock with the Foodie Show from 6 to 8. It's Mo Kelly with the aptly entitled Mo Kelly Show. And then tonight from 8 to 10, you'll hear Brian Suits with The Dark Secret Place. So that's our Saturday lineup here on KFI. Lines open always at the top of the hour, or usually at the top of the hour, and they fill up pretty quickly. 800-520-1534, 800-520-1534. And if you call in, you'll actually get in the queue. And sometimes, and people bitch and moan to me all the time. Bill, I tried to get through for 45 minutes, an hour and a half. I go, did you call top of the hour? No. I go, what? How many times can I tell you that? I mean, that's the one piece of advice that is so legitimate. If you want to get in, if you want to have one of your ridiculous questions answered with ridiculous advice, the number is 800-520-1534. This is Handle on the Law, marginal legal advice where I tell you, you have absolutely no case. Here is one that at first glance, you say, oh, come on, really? That's impossible. But there is a reason for this law, and let me explain it. There is a new bill in California headed to Governor Newsom's desk that would lower the penalties for adults who have consensual sex with a minor. If there is under 10 years of difference between the perpetrator and the victim, and you go, for example, if it's 10 years, a 24-year-old can molest a 15-year-old. I mean, that's statutory rape. It's not even molesting. It's straight-out rape legally, and it's a lower penalty. Yeah, it is a lower penalty, but let me tell you what the penalty is. The judge can determine that there will be no lifetime sex offender registry. Once someone is put on the sex offender list, that's forever. And the argument here is if there's 10 years difference, it's a lesser crime, even though the crime is the same, it's a lesser offense in terms of a lifetime sentence of being put on the registry than someone who, for example, let's say is in his 30s and goes after a 12-year-old or someone who is a teenager and, well, a teenager is going after a minor would. Well, let me put it this way. Right now, 19-year-old getting nailed for having consensual sex with a 15-year-old, that's a lifetime offense. And that's what this bill is designed to do, is to say, okay, under these circumstances, it's not as bad. And you don't deserve being put on that registry for the rest of your life. And that's what this bill is about. And okay, the judge has the discretion based on the facts, whether the sex offender registration is even warranted. And I'll buy that. That makes sense. because being on that list, it's a lifetime, literally a lifetime sentence. All right. Michelle. Hi, Michelle. Welcome to Handle on the Law. Yes.
Yes. Yes. My parents had some renters. My dad passed away, so my mom was handling it. I kept reminding her. Anyway, the bottom line is they weren't paying their rent. I was saying, Mom, we need to, you know, do one of those quit claims, but anyway. So what do you do for renters? What happens is they're out now. They didn't pay about 6 months of rent. They moved to a place in Nevada. I actually have their address.
You sue them.
Worth it.
You sue them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How much rent rent do they owe?
It's between, I'm trying to figure out, anyway, between $11,000 and $13,000.
All right. Well, if you're suing in California, the jurisdictional limit is $10,000. You go for that.
Okay.
Because if you can get $10,000, you're walking away free. I mean, that's a win. And it depends on the court. And I've gotten it from both sides. Can you file in California and sue and serve them in Nevada? Some courts say no. Small claims courts, the defendant has to be in California. But I think you can because the breach took place in California. The contract was signed in California. The plaintiff is in California. I think that lawsuit can be served. And so you file it here, you serve it in Nevada, you go into small claims court. And not paying rent, that's a pretty hard one to defend. There are some defenses, but habitability defenses where it's an unsafe condition. You weren't told, there's a roof leak in the roof and it rained like hell and ruined the furniture. Yeah. If it's just straight non-payment, even saying, I can't afford it, that doesn't fly. There'll be a judgment. But that's what you can do. Yep, you go to small claims court and you serve them and people, have a rough time. But that's, this is a society where, God forbid, they really want you to pay your bills. Anthony. Hi, Anthony. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hey, Bill. You lied. I called at the top of the hour. It's been about an hour.
Oh, really? Well, that's not my fault. It's you called at the top of last hour?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, my screener is fired. That's it. She won't be talking to you anymore. All right. What can I do for you?
Sounds good. I got a question about an issue we're having. I work for my family's company, Del Mori Marinara, and we're having an issue with the distributor. Can I name the distributor?
No, because I don't want to get sued. So you're having a problem with a distributor. Now, you manufacture what?
Marinara sauce.
Marinara sauce. And you distribute it to restaurants, stores?
Both, but mainly, like Costco.
Wow. Yeah, that's good. That's a big buy. That's a big get, Costco. It's a lot of product you're selling. Okay, so what is your problem with your distributor?
So the distributor that we're having an issue with is based down south, and they pretty much, they're a big company, and I've researched quite a bit and seen a lot of similar problems with other companies that they're having the same issue as we are, where basically they'll get the order, we'll send out a certain number of pallets, and they have like a net 30 or something to pay, I think it's, and they never pay back on, or they never, when we get the check, it's always like thousands of dollars worth of deductions.
How many times, how many times has this happened?
Oh man, it's been years and it's
why do you still keep on working with a distributor if they're willing to screw you over and over and again?
Well, for a while, we needed the volume.
There aren't other distributors that can also equal the volume? This is just one company that can do the volume?
We're looking into it right now, but the big store that they go to is Publix. you know, down south. And we have not been able to find another distributor that's able to reach as many as this,
all right,
this one is.
Okay, so that's a reason. All right, I'll buy that. Yeah. So in the meantime, how much money have they screwed you out of in the last 3 years? Or 4 years, because after that, there's a statute. What's how much money do they owe you?
I mean, I don't have a
give me a ballpark. Give me a ballpark.
On average, let's say we send out maybe 100 orders a year on average, and there may be $15,000 an order, and they'll give us roughly half.
Okay, so if so they're screwing you out of $7,500. Okay, the $7,500 an order they're screwing you out of, is that every month?
Yeah, every couple of weeks.
All right, so it's $15,000 a month. What? That's $180,000 a year, going back forever, and you've just accepted it. And you haven't taken them to court?
Well, so now it's my father who owns the company, and I just
we're running out of time, so we have to get to the bottom line, your question? So,
but the point is that up until recently, with everything going on, we haven't had the ability to stand up to them, and now that we've been getting more sales, direct and everything.
Okay, what's your question?
So how can we, do we have any way to?
Yeah, you sue them. Yeah, you sue them. Yes, you sue them. Now they have a defense, and the defense is, Anthony, why have you put up with this for so long and accepted our payment of half price for the last 5 years? So what we have done is we have modified the contract, and it's been changed by your acceptance because of the way you act. That's their defense. Normal people mm-hmm. don't sit back and just let themselves get screwed over every 2 weeks. Normal companies, every 2 weeks for years and years. That's a question. And if I'm the court, I'm going, why did you let this go so fast? And there's something called waiver. And waiver means you have waived it. And that's what they're going to argue. And I think it's a good argument. This is Handle on the Law. If you're injured and need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk.
And good morning. Bill Handel here on a Saturday right up until 11 o'clock when Leo Laporte, our tech guy, comes aboard. Back we go to Handle on the Law, marginal legal advice. Hello, Betty.
Hi, Bill.
Yes, ma'am.
My daughter has a home nearby, and there's two homeless people that leave their car parked in the front of their house with clothes hanging out all over it. They come by periodically to peek inside and take something out. They also drive another car they must sleep in. We don't know what they do. She wants to rent the home because people won't rent it because of this awful-looking car out in front. I've called, and she has called, the police department, L.A. Parking Enforcement, sanitation, and no one's interested in doing anything about it.
Oh, yeah. Boy, are you...
Do you have any ideas?
Yeah,
you're... It's been there 4.5 months.
Yeah, boy, are you stuck between a rock and a hard place. Clearly, they're in violation of the law, and I think... Well, you can't park a car in front of a house or on a public street for more than 72 hours. So they're in violation of that. But here's your problem is that if parking enforcement won't do anything, the police won't do anything, that nobody on a municipal level is willing to enforce the law. And I'll tell you why what's going on right now is there is an entire issue of the homeless. This is part of the group of people that in the world of political correctness can't be harassed. You can't roust them. These tent encampments are left alone because they used to have the police used to go in and clean them out. Those days are, for the most part, gone. I'm going to suggest calling your local council person.
We've called everybody, but we'll do that. She's losing money every month.
Of course she is. I know that.
And nothing we can do about it.
I don't, you know, short of that, you got me on what's going to happen. Is this across the street?
No, it's right next to her, right on her, you know, right next to her property.
Ah, well, you can, and they hang clothes outside?
When they come by, they take all this junk out. I have pictures of it.
Okay, so let's say all the junk is out, and what if you're watering your lawn and you soak it by mistake?
Well,
over and over again.
Oh, that's an idea.
All right, and then when the police come around, what are they going to do? Arrest you?
How about moving the car?
You can't move it. No, you can't touch the car.
Why?
Because it's someone else's property. And
what would happen?
I'm sorry, what will happen? They could arrest you.
Oh.
Yeah, and so you can't do that. But you can. I would water my lawn.
Okay, Bill.
All right, that's what that is a tough one, because this is one where, you know, if the authorities aren't willing to go forward, there's not much you can do. People ask me constantly, well, I got beat up, or, someone assaulted me. What can I do? Can I get them arrested? Can I have them criminally charged? Not if the DA and the police don't go forward with it. There's nothing you can do other than a civil suit. And a civil suit, are you going to really sue a homeless person? That's why I didn't even bring that up. All right, let me tell you other people that have problems. You, what do you think your personal information is worth to cyber criminals? Well, online banking logins, yours, I can buy for about $35. Now, if I want to buy your entire identity, documents, account details, it's going to cost me about $1,285. Most of this information comes from large-scale data breaches. So, really have to understand how this cybercrime and identity theft work. And if you're just monitoring your credit, you're not doing nearly enough. LifeLock, this is protection. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats. For example, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. What is the dark web? It's that part of the internet where the bad guys use to buy and sell our information. And if LifeLock detects your information has been compromised, potentially they send you an alert, you deal with it right now. If your identity has been compromised, they work to fix it. Now, no one can prevent all identity theft or monitor every transaction, every business. But I'll tell you what LifeLock does, protect you, and they're offering a free dark web scan at LifeLock.com/scan, promo code handle, and see how much at risk you are. And you can save up to 25% off your first year. Promo code handle, so it's a free scan, LifeLock.com/scan, promo code handle. This is Handle on the Law. Good morning, Bill Handel here on a Saturday, and the fires are still going, and we wake up or spend the afternoon, and it's overcast, but it's not. It's the ash and the smoke. It's thousands of homes. I mean, it's just horrible. And the fire season has just started, and already we are at, by far, the record number of acreage burned in California. Let's get people depressed who are calling in. At least we can do that. 800-520-1534 is the number to call for legal advice. That's 800-520-1534. Welcome back to Handle on the Law, Marginal Legal Advice, where I tell you, you have no case whatsoever. Marie. Hello, Marie. Welcome.
Hey, Bill.
Yes, ma'am.
My brother, who's 14 months old, he's 63, and my dad had a fallout, and I've been estranged from my father. I haven't really spoken to him in maybe 15 years, so he gets a hold of me and says that my brother and him no longer are speaking. They're done. And my brother was in a revocable trust. And I have a stepbrother, but I don't know him. So the stepbrother and my brother are in the revocable trust. My father says, you know, my brother's not going to get anything. He doesn't want anything to do with them. So he sends me a copy of the revocable trust, and it has my brother's name, and then my father wrote in a black pen, or my name. And in other words, my brother's name is still in it.
Yeah, no, your dad has changed the trust by crossing out someone's name and then writing in yours, correct?
He did not cross out my brother's name.
All right, so the brother's name is still in it. Okay, fair enough. So yeah. Now your name theoretically, and I'm going to give you some bad news in a minute. So now there's this one more person that's added to the trust. Well, here's your problem. You have to amend the trust. It has to be an amended trust, which means it has to be re-signed and re-notarized. Mm-hmm. And a name either added or removed, and it's got to be a real instrument, because right now crossing out names after the fact doesn't matter who does it, and adding names doesn't change much. So if your dad really wants to do that, have him rewrite the trust, have him amend the trust. It's just people do it all the time. I amend my trust every week, depending on how pissed off my kids are. My kids make me.
Yeah, well, my dad's not an easy person to deal
with. Well, then that's the, you know, okay, so what's your question?
Well, so I spoke to my lawyer, and he said he can write something up, and then I can send it to my dad, and hopefully he'll sign it.
Well, yeah, you can. Mm-hmm. You can amend the trust and go, here you go. Dad, you sign it. And the problem is, let's say who is ever disinherited, if you will, no longer a beneficiary, or someone else who whose beneficiary the money is diluted because of you, immediately goes back and says, hey, dad didn't redo it. Sister did it and sent it to dad and coerced him to sign it. They're all kind of, you've got some issues there, but I'd suck up to dad real quick and have him do it. Having your lawyer do it and putting it in front of dad and say, hey, you're signing this, is a lot stronger than here crossing out names and putting your name, you know, at an angle and saying I'm adding someone else's name. I mean, that just doesn't do anything. Helen. Hello. Hi. Helen. Welcome to Handle on the Law. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. My mother received a letter. It says it's from the Social Security Administration, and it says that her Social Security payments are going to be reduced by about $130 because of a change to my dad's earnings record. But he's deceased and he retired 31 years ago. Is it possible this letter's fraudulent?
Sure. And all she has to do is make an appointment and walk into a Social Security office and sit down with one of the clerks and go, here's my issue. Is this legitimate? And the clerk's going to go yes or no, and then haul out the records because it's all computerized and there's a record of everything. And she can go through it with the clerk at the Social Security Administration, because I'll tell you what is not fraudulent. Making an appointment, going to the building that says Social Security Administration, pulling a ticket, waiting there, going in front of a clerk and those little cubicle things that the one that I went to almost looks like one of those prison waiting rooms, or those prison rooms where you talk to someone across the other side of the glass, where, by the way, that's the way you do business. That's how you handle it. Yeah, it could be a scam, but who the hell knows? It's easy to go to the office and just find out if it's true or not.
Okay, but to your knowledge, can they go back 31 years?
I don't know about 31 years. No, I don't think they can go back that long, but you got to talk to the clerk. I've never heard of going back 31 years. And if they've overpaid for 31 years, well, there's a statute issue. They can't go back, because then what would happen is not only would your mom get no more Social Security, but she'd be sent a bill for $1.8 million. So it doesn't seem, you know, it doesn't seem like it's a lot of reality there. Louise. Hi, Louise. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hi, Bill. Can you tell me if there's a state law or fee or tax to move out of the state of California?
No, why would there be? How does California?
Well, I know New Jersey's starting to charge. It has a law proposed that they're going to charge people to move out.
No, I don't think they can do that under the Constitution, even. because no state can make it more difficult for you to go into another state. Now, a state can nail you on taxes. That they can do. You know, what California does is make it really difficult when you move to get away from paying California taxes. They'll do everything they can with any tenuous little hole to say, aha, for the purposes of our taxation, you're still a California resident, or you work here, or you work for a company here, and therefore you're going to owe California taxes, income taxes. But no, there's no penalty for up and moving. They can't. And I don't know how New Jersey could ever do that. It would instantly fail. Instantly. There's no way that could be upheld. Sam. Hey, Sam, welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hi, Bill. Hello.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I'm a general contractor, B license. 2 years ago, I started a project where I never pulled permits. He he put up a sign with my name on it in front of the project, building a two-unit apartment from ground up. He decided he wanted to go and pull permits on his own, owner, builder. Never paid me a dime. I started a job. Then we came to a disagreement, and he fired me. I gave him a price. I wrote up a cheesy contract, you know. But apparently he fired me, and he went and hired another contractor, which cost him double the money. And now he tried to sue me for the amount he lost on the building. And I hired a lawyer, and finally he lost the case. I couldn't buy a bond. He went after my surety bond and everything. Do I have recourse? How much can I sue him back for harassment?
Well, no, you can't sue him for harassment because him filing a lawsuit against you is not considered harassment, because then everybody who ever files a lawsuit is harassment. Can't do that. Can't fire him for, you can't sue him for firing you. And incidentally, were you not allowed a defense because you didn't pull the permit?
I never got one penny out of it. And
No. Did your defense fail because you never pull a permit? Did the court even hear what you had to say? Or did they say, have a permit, you're gone?
We went to a deposition. They were suing me for $1 million.
No, I understand, but I'm asking you, your defense, were you able to defend the suit by the fact that you didn't pull a permit? Did they let you defend
it? Yes, I was.
Okay, that's what I want to know. And so they sued you for $1 million. How much was the judgment for?
They went from $1 million to $400,000.
What was the judgment for?
There was no judgment. There's no case.
So what's your? Oh, you just want to know if you can sue him for harassment. But you say you lost. How do you lose if there's no case?
I didn't lose. I couldn't buy surety. I couldn't
because you were sued. I see. You couldn't buy.
I was under a lawsuit. Yes.
Oh, okay. Is the lawsuit over?
It's not over.
All right.
I have it in writing. No. He decided to drop the case.
Yeah, and they still won't give you. Then that's administrative decision.
I get it.
Boy, you make it so convoluted. That's an administrative decision for you not to have a bond. And if the state is necessary to have a bond and you can't get a bond and you are... you should be able to, because you're not at fault, then you have to go through a whole administrative process. You have to go to the contractor's license board and go along that route. And the reason he's not interrupting me is I already hung up on him. This is Handle on the Law. If you're injured and need a lawyer,
go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI. AM 640. More stimulating talk.
Welcome back. Bill Handel here. This is Handle on the Law, Marginal Legal Advice. Hey, Jimbo. Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
Well, you're very fond of always playing Jerry Lewis, You'll Never Walk Alone.
Yeah, because that's a song that I figure grates, and it bothers everybody to the point where you're forced to make the phone call. I would do anything not to hear it. Yes.
Well, you're not getting into the full range of the man's musical ability.
That's probably true.
You've got to also play somebody from Cinderfella. You got to play that every
day. No, I'm not going to do that. No, it has to be. I've been playing this Jerry Lewis song for probably 20 years. So the answer is no. Do you have a question, by the way?
You know what, Bill? If I need legal advice from you, I'd rather be stripped naked, beaten, and buried alive.
Couldn't agree with you more. I think exactly the same way. Mark! Hello, Mark. That's welcome.
Me. Hi, Bill.
How are you? Yes, sir. I'm good. What can I do for you?
It's kind of premature, but all my information was basically taken from me. There was a officer that pulled over somebody on the freeway, and they looked in the information in the car, and they found all my information in one of their notebooks. It had social, birth date, company information.
All right, so someone had your identity. Did they use your identity?
I don't know yet. They called one of the credit card companies I do business with, called me, and someone was trying to open up a...
Okay. Then someone is trying to... Okay, so how did you know that someone was trying to open up some credit in your name?
They called me.
Okay, so at this point, people know, and your identity is at risk, obviously.
But my question I've called in for was also that was found, we use a company like a bank company when we do business with other companies that were a credit card transaction. They put the money through that company, and it gets deposited in our account. Well, that company's name was also found in the information, plus the blank check that I gave them that was voided, that gave them basically information about our company. But the check was for that company to open up the processing for...
Okay. So they just used a blank check, and your name is on that check, or having to do with you?
The company name.
Oh, then what does that what does that have to do with you?
It refers to the company, the processing company that does all our business.
Okay, but what does that have to do with you?
It has all my social.
Who has all your social? The company that is processing, or the company check, the check, your company that has the check that was somehow taken?
They have all that information from the person that was pulled over on the freeway.
I understand they got your identity, but you're putting in there, and there was a check, a blank check from the company I work for that does our processing. I don't understand what that blank check has to do with anything.
The blank check was given to the processing company to open up the account.
Okay, I get it. But therefore, that is connected to your identity theft?
Along with all my information.
No,
my
it's
ID
not along well. With all your information. You can't. And they had a tire of mine. They took off my car. And they have a... You can't do that. You're conflating everything. Your identity, the way you talk about a blank check, that is, I can't see any connection. That's the company's problem. Your problem is your identity has been stolen. And now the question is, has it been used to harm you? It doesn't look like it yet, but all you can do is call, make sure that all the credit reporting agencies... And I would consider getting one of those credit repair people, not credit repair. I would consider talking to, for example, the people I do commercials for and just explain, I want to sign up. What can I do now that someone has my identity? That's what I would do. Okay?
Okay, but my question also, isn't the company that has all my information and the blank check that opened up the account liable or bonded for the protection of my information?
Only if you can prove, forget about the check. I mean, I don't know where you're going with that. Only if you can prove that the identity thief got the identity from your company, and then they weren't reasonable, and then they're somehow liable, and that is not easy to prove. Because
they got it from the processing company.
How does the processing company have your identity? On a, off a blank check?
No.
I'm totally confused. All right, thank you. That's somehow I get so frustrated doing this show, I can't stand it. This is Handle on the Law. And good morning on a Saturday. Bill Handel here, KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Hour number three of the legal show. And we're followed by, or I'm followed. It's a royal we. I don't know why I keep on saying that.
Because throughout the week, it's a we thing.
No, you're right. You're right, Layla. But it's I like the royal we.
Aww.
We are not amused. Okay. Anyway, following this show, Leo Laporte at 11 o'clock, and then we have Neil Saavedra 2 to 5 o'clock with the Foodie Show. Tonight, 6, Mo Kelly, 6 to 8, Brian Suits, 8 to 10. That's our lineup here on a Saturday. Phone numbers, well, guess what? We have a full board, ladies and gentlemen. I keep on telling you that when you call, when I tell you to call, you call. I was just about to give the phone number again, but why would I do that? This is Handle on the Law, marginal legal advice, where I tell you you have no state, no case. Now, there are two Mexican states. That's where I'm going, that have banned the sale of, and let me explain what's going on. How often have we heard about how junk food is affecting minors, our kids? Our kids are getting fat. Our kids are suffering from diabetes. They're on their way to heart conditions. They're on their way to all kinds of problems based on being fat. Also, having been a fat kid, there is a psychological aspect to this. As I grew up pretty fat, a couple of things. I wasn't particularly athletic, and athletes do much better. We're athletic kids, and I never got laid. And that is really important, as do when you enter your teenage year when you're fat. That was the subject I talked about with my shrink last week, so we won't get into that right now. However, we know that junk food is not good for kids. In Mexico, two Mexican states, Oaxaca and Tabasco, they're banning the sale of junk food to minors. That's it. Bill that was introduced, and guess who's opposing it? Junk food places, small businesses oppose the bill, the proposed law, that if children can't buy items from their store, then they'll just turn to street vendors who apparently face less regulation. That's how they're saying you should. If anybody has to sell it, it has to be us, because these kids buy come hell or high water, and wouldn't you like have legitimate business people where there are controls, where there are health controls and not just people on the street selling this garbage? Well, makes sense, but there only have been very limited advances in banning food to kids. For example, sugary drinks. There was a stupid law that was passed here in California that the Big Gulp, where you go to 7-Eleven and I think the Big Gulp is, what, 3.5 gallons of Coke in one big container? Well, you can't do that. You can only buy 2.5 gallons now per container. And so there are attempts, and they haven't gone very far. Schools are better off at controlling, and certainly businesses can control what is sold in their own businesses. But, it's not going to work. And why? Well, because kids love junk food. You know why? Because there's a lot of fat in it. It has a lot of salt in it. It tastes great. God bless them in Mexico. In these two states, ain't going to happen, but they're trying. All right. Phone calls. We've got some pretty good ones. All right, Gail, let's start with you. Hello, Gail. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Thank you for taking my call, Bill. I was injured. A door closed on my finger, and I lost part of my finger. My friend came to my side when they brought me to the emergency room. She gave me an attorney. The attorney has the case, and it's been over a year.
Oh.
I would like to find out what is the statute of limitations.
Oh, you're fine. It's a couple years, but it's time for another attorney. It really is. What is the attorney telling you? What's going on with the case? What reports have you been getting?
I can't get a hold of him.
Okay,
and
that's easy.
To go to his office.
Okay, no. Don't even bother. Just get another attorney. You can go to handleonthelaw.com. Personal injury attorney will take over everything. You don't even have to talk to your existing attorney anymore. Man, it's over. All right, anybody who does that is just not doing a good job. One of the things that an attorney has to do, in addition to being a competent attorney, is also communicate with the client. Now, not unreasonably, I've had people on the show saying, my attorney won't call me back. And then I find out, yeah, because the first week it was 3 phone calls, the second week it was 4 phone calls, and finally the attorney said, I'm done. I'll call you when it's appropriate. I mean, that happens all the time, too. But a year, assuming that what you say happened to you, it's time to bail. You can always, always fire an attorney. Always. Even the retainer agreement should say on it that you have the right to fire him or her. And if it doesn't say that, you have the right to fire him or her. Always. You own the case. David. Hello, David. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hello, Mr. Wolf. Thank
yes,
you for
sir.
Taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I had a question. My brother went into rehab about early January, dropped his 14-year-old daughter off with us. He has since ran away to Mexico. So we're looking to adopt his daughter.
Sure.
So what kind of recourse is he going to have? Because she doesn't want to go back with him.
All right. Well, let's start with the fact that you have an abandonment issue for him bailing out. And how long has he been gone?
He took off to Mexico about March.
Oh, so it's just been a few months.
We called Child Protective Services, and they said this is not considered abandonment.
Not yet.
He dropped her off.
Not yet. I mean, it will be, but not yet. And so the problem you've got is a question of time. And yeah, he can come back. He can say, yeah, I went to Mexico. I had issues. I had to go there. I dropped off my daughter with my brother because I know she's being taken care of. That's not abandonment.
Mm-hmm.
That's not abandonment. So it's way premature to talk about that. Now, I don't know when abandonment kicks in. It's probably, I don't think there's a statutory time. I mean, if there is, there is. That's easy. Let's say it's 125 days, just throwing a figure out. Day 126, you walk into court or you file your legal papers. But if there isn't any, then what kicks in is a reasonable time, and it's up to the judge to determine. But there is going to be a judge that's going to say he bailed out 3 months ago and he abandoned the kid. Uh-uh. That ain't going to happen. So the answer is until the only way you're going to be able to adopt is if dad signs off. Otherwise, what can I tell you? The daughter is hanging out with you, and the daughter will want to hang out with you. And obviously the father is not that interested in keeping the daughter. And so hopefully the kid just stays with you until the age of majority. This is Handle on the Law.
If you're injured and need a lawyer,
go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI, AM 640.
And good morning, Bill Handle here on a Saturday morning. Let's get right to it. More Handle on the Law, marginal legal advice, phone calls. John. Hello, John. Welcome to Handle on the Law. Yes, sir.
Hey, good morning, Bill. 2013, I purchased a Toyota all-electric vehicle. It was a collaboration between Tesla and Toyota. In 2018, a major component, which is the traction motor, went out. They fixed it under warranty. And then in 2020, the same two pieces went out again. out of warranty. Toyota said they're not going to do anything for me. I researched on the internet, and it's well documented that these two pieces are defective. My question to you is two-prong. One is, do I have a case? The second is, the vehicle's worth about $12,000. I'm in California. $10,000 is the small claims limit. Is it worth pursuing it above small claims?
Well, not if it's $12,000, but would the vehicle be worth more than $12,000 if those pieces didn't fall apart? That's one question.
High Blue Book's about 12.
Okay. With that being said, it's out of warranty. It's been replaced. You're not going to go for a defective parts lawsuit because that's crazy. You'll have Toyota and Tesla fighting you. Yeah, you can do it. You can do that. What is it going to cost to replace those parts, incidentally?
$16,000.
Oh, to replace the parts?
Yeah, but the car's only worth 12.
All right, then the car should be worth nothing. Because is the car working now? They replaced the parts, so it's working?
They refused to replace the parts.
No, I understand, but is the car working now? Is it drivable now?
Not at all.
And it's going to cost $16,000 to fix it?
Yes, sir.
That's not a car that's worth anything. You have zero. Correct. You have zero on your hands. Because the High Blue Book, $12,000, assumes the car's actually running. What you have is a piece of scrap metal that is, in reality, as opposed to a working car. So what you say is, the value of the car is $12,000. It is worthless based on what you guys have done. Yeah, I would take it to small claims court, and if you can get the $10,000, I'd go ahead. Now, I don't know if you're going to win, but you can try.
Okay.
You know, it's certainly worth the shot. I would take it to small claims court, but... You know, are there defenses? Yeah, it's out of warranty. When you signed it, they signed the agreement. There's all kinds of defenses they have. But I'd still take them to small claims court because and especially if the judge ever had a Toyota he's had problems with, there you go. George. Hi, George. Welcome to Handle on the Law. George, you there? Oh, that's my fault, maybe. Oh, I just hung up on George. That was my fault. George, call back. The master of technology. I am the techno bay. All right.
Techno bay. I'm going to call you that.
Yeah, techno maven. All right. You know what? I'll get to George because we're running out of time and I want to give him plenty of time to ask his phone call when we come back after the break. But let me tell you what's going on with Norton 360. Great back-to-school deals mean usually new devices. Matter of fact, new devices are constant in your life. Smartphone, tablets, laptops, all risky to your privacy. Because in today's connected world, our information is out there exposed. And password protection doesn't necessarily block cyber criminals from hacking into your device and stealing all of our information. So this is Norton 360. What Norton 360 does is help keep those prying eyes out. This is protection for your devices. Real-time protection against existing and emerging threats that puts your personal information at risk. A VPN, virtual private network, that uses bank-grade encryption to help protect your information. A password manager that securely creates passwords and stores credit card information, etc. Now, no one can prevent all cybercrime, but Norton 360, this is a powerful ally. Obviously, I'm a customer, and I am thrilled. Get up to 50% off your first year with an annual subscription at norton.com/handle. That's norton.com/handle. This is Handle on the Law. Bill Handel here on a Saturday morning, and let's continue with Handel on the Law, marginal legal advice. George, there you go. Welcome to Handel on the Law.
Hi, Bill. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I live in the city of Paramount. I've been renting a house for the past 12 and a half years, and the landlord
has told us that she wants us out by November this year. We are not late on any rent payments. We're, you know, I guess she just wants to move back into her house. So I want to know if I have any legal recourse or anything.
To what? To stay in?
Well, my understanding, I'm not sure, like, I mean, either because of COVID-19 or my understanding is that if she wants us out, that she would have to pay, you know.
Yeah, there's relocation fee. Expenses. First of all, there's relocation fee going on right now. Second, during COVID, you can't be evicted. And that is going to be good. I don't know if they've passed the law yet. I think California may have already extended to the end of the year. And even if there's sort of a window there, you're going to be protected until probably the end of the year. But you can be evicted if there isn't a law that's protecting you from eviction. Yeah, she can ask you to go out. And even under rent control, where you can't be tossed, one of the reasons that you can be is because the landlord wants to move back in. I mean, it's her property. And she says, I want to live in it now. I mean, what is the tenant going to say? No, you're never going to live in it because I'm here. It doesn't work that way. So you're protected to the extent that you can't be evicted, at least until the first of the year, and that you're going to get relocation money pursuant to California law. But in the end, that's all you have. And if there, I'm assuming there's no rent control in Paramount. I don't think so. And if there is, then you follow the rules of Paramount. L.A., there's all kinds of rent control. Santa Monica is insane rent control. So it depends what city, what jurisdiction, how far the laws of California kick in, but they don't stop evictions. They just talk about relocation money. Andrea. Hi, Andrea. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Thank you. I own a townhouse.
Yes.
And my parents have a full-on trust. We're on it. It's all good. Can I put my townhouse into their trust just in case I kick the bucket?
Sure.
It's in the trust.
Sure. You can actually transfer. You can transfer the townhouse to anybody you want. And the only issue is a taxation issue because, how much equity is in the townhouse, Andrea?
$400,000.
Of equity.
Oh, sorry, $200,000.
Okay, so you're handing a trust, which effectively is your parents' because it's a revocable trust, and it only really has any validity when they die, and then the terms of the trust then have to be followed for disbursement. So the issue is a tax issue. That's all it is. You call your accountant. Is there any tax liability there on your part, on their part? Because you could also argue, and I think it is, for tax purposes, you just handed them $200,000. And so you want to talk to an accountant, but the short answer is, of course, you can transfer the property and you just quit claim from you to the trust. And that gets easy. Johnny. Hello, Johnny. Oh, welcome to Handle on the Law. Yes.
Hold on, Bill. I'm taking you off speaker.
Good.
First of all, I want to thank you for all your knowledge you impart to us.
Yes. I'm vast, grateful. Vast knowledge that I have. Yes. I couldn't agree more.
No, that's good.
Yes.
Okay. What would you do? Walmart habitually does bait and switch ads on their website. And you can't follow up. They don't give you no ID, no email. They deliberately no email, no ID. They don't even give you an ID for the customer service. They say you have to talk to legal.
Okay.
So here's what they do. And I have photographs. I have everything. They advertise a product. Okay. This product. Okay. And then they put a price on it. So I go to will call and it's not even remotely the product. Okay. Just to give an example how blatant this product is 4 feet tall. It's a flushing thing. It's got 15 gallons. It's on a dolly with a motor. Okay? It's $600. All right? That sounds reasonable, right? You go to store level to pick it up. It's a 5-gallon bucket, which costs $3 at Home Depot, and it has a bilge pump, which costs $15 online. And they say, no, that's the item. And they say, well, why do you do that? That's not the item. That's not what you're advertising. And
I have a question. All right, Johnny, I have a question. I've shopped at Walmart.
I get upset.
I understand you get upset. How is it possible that I have never heard of Walmart doing that? And this is the first complaint of this kind that I have heard in over 20 years of practicing or doing this show, not so much practicing law. And I know tons of people who shop at Walmart, and nobody has ever made that complaint, Johnny, except you.
Hold on. This is online, Bill. We're not talking at
again.
The
it doesn't
level.
Matter. It doesn't matter. Well, I buy things from Walmart online all the time. How come you're the only person that's experienced that?
Hey, listen. Can I send you the online?
No, I'm just asking that. I'm just asking the question. What do you think? I'm going to follow up? You think I'm going to follow up and then go to the store and pick up and do all the stuff that you're doing just to find out if you're right or wrong? The only question I have is. Try to explain to me why you are the sole human being that I've ever heard make that complaint.
Well, because you never heard it doesn't mean it's a valid complaint.
I'm not arguing that. I'm not arguing that. You're right. But because Walmart has a million employees and has thousands of stores and millions and millions of people buy exactly the way you do on the internet and pick up, how come you're the only person that I know of that's had that experience?
Why would I know why I'm the only person?
I'm just asking. I understand. Does it make any sense that, oh, how do I know how many? There may be millions. There may be billions. Okay, thank you. And the answer to your question is, what would you do? I wouldn't shop at Walmart anymore. That's all. Sure, why not? Robert. Hi, Robert. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hey, good morning, Bill. How are you?
Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
Hey, I was involved in an accident a week and a half ago. I was actually stopped on the freeway and rear-ended about, but the CHP said probably 50 to 60 miles an hour. Now, the issue I have.
Hang on a minute. Hold on. You're breaking up a little bit. Were you rear-ended?
Yes.
Okay, got it. All right. So you're 50, now, 60 miles an hour. You're stopped, rear-ended. Okay, now let's move on.
Okay. So what's going on? I took the vehicle to the body shop. The body shop took a look at it. The frame's bent in four spots. You know, he gave an estimate back to the insurance company of $17,000, which is close to probably totaling the vehicle. The insurance company comes back and only estimates the damage at $12,000, but left a lot of stuff out and using used parts on it, you know, which I don't think, you know...
Okay.
Putting it together with you, things.
No, I understand. Okay. So you're saying it's $17,000 to fix it based on the estimates that you have from your body shop. They're saying $12,000. And what's your question?
So my question is, you know, the other guy's insurance company is out of Atlanta, Georgia, and they want to, you know, have rights to inspect the vehicle. And I'm okay with that. But my thing is.
What do you mean? They want to have rights to the vehicle? I don't understand what that means.
Yeah, they sent me a letter saying that they want to have rights to execute the inspection on the vehicle.
Oh, okay, got it. They want to have, you're talking about the insurance company wants that, or I'm assuming it's the insurance company, or is it the fella that hit you? Which one?
It's the insurance.
Okay, the insurance company wants access to make an assessment. All right, your question?
So my question is, you know, they're trying to communicate. His insurance company is trying to communicate with me, and I'd rather have them communicate through my insurance company.
Fine.
You know,
and?
Number one. And number two is, do I need to hire? I mean, and yeah.
No,
I
no, you don't hire. No, you don't. Were you injured?
Yes.
Oh, then you hire. How badly were you injured?
Right now, I just went through my first physical therapy yesterday.
Okay, it's soft tissue.
It's soft tissue, and they're saying there's some ligament damage.
If there's ligament damage and that's and you can see that objectively, yes, you need a personal injury lawyer who will then handle all of the business of the car repair because that happens all the time. Insurance company says, I'll give you 12, but I want 15. You just say no. And you go, fine, let's litigate. And an attorney does a much better job of negotiating with an insurance company than you ever would because they're pros and they're talking to pros. You are so out of your league when you're negotiating with an insurance company for an issue like this that's coupled with real physical damage, with real injury. Get an attorney. Go ahead real quickly because I'm out of time.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your time, Bill. I'll get a hold of the attorney.
Okay, and you can go to handleonthelaw.com. I always suggest that because there are plenty of personal injury attorneys who do a great job and are not schlockers, because there are plenty of schlockers out there in the industry. This is Handle on the Law. If you're injured and need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk.
KFI Handle here on a Saturday morning. As we end the show, we're going to be out of here in about 10 minutes. For those of you that are on, are waiting for me to call to talk to you, just hang on, because I'm going to keep on going off the air after the show. And if you want to ask questions, feel free to call after the show. And I will, any call that's up there, will answer, and I'll keep on going until we simply run out of calls. And keep in mind, if it's busy, since when I do this off the air, we don't have the commercials that all of us so profoundly love. We don't have breaks of any kind. So I go right through the phone calls. So 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later, the lines are going to be open. So over the next few minutes, call if it's busy. Just call again. And if you're already on, you stay put. Don't go away. 800-520-1534. Welcome back to Handle on the Law. Hello, Pam. Welcome to the show.
God, Pam.
Hello.
I'm here. Caught me with a bagel in my mouth.
Excellent. What kind of bagel?
Poppy seed.
Oh, poppy seed.
Oh, that sounds good.
I'm getting one of those today, as a matter of fact. I leave here,
guys,
I'm going,
you
yes.
Need, you need to.
Yeah, poppy, just don't take, don't take a drug test, for real.
Oh, are you serious?
Serious, because poppy seeds are made from poppy. It'll show up. It'll show up.
How interesting that is.
Yeah. Okay, what can I do?
All righty. So, all right. So my mother owns her family home for the past 40 years. She has had renters on and off again. My mother is now senior. She currently has renters that have been renting. Two of them have been renting for about 14 years. And I am also living in that home. It's a large family home. And one of the renters is a senior. She's had increasing physical ailments. She had, you know, heart attack and these things, and she's recovered and it's better. But now she's been diagnosed with cognitive dysfunction, and so much so that her children are now starting to send the rent money. But her cognitive dysfunction has been manifesting where she doesn't know how to clean up after herself properly. It's been really increasing over the last few years. We didn't see the writing on the wall. We've never seen it in person before. Anyway, so, you know, we've wondered if her kids are going to, her kids live in LA, but that's where we live. And we're just wondering if they're going to kick in and take over and get her into a care facility.
Well, that's not, you know what, Pam, as lovely as you are, that's not your issue. You can't force it. All you can deal is with the rent. Is rent being paid? Is it not being paid? This woman in a position where she's harming the property at all? And if she's not and continues to pay the rent, you're Los Angeles, rent control is here. There's nothing you can do, other than go mm-hmm. in and, you know, make weird gestures in front of her and see if she laughs.
So last month she fell and broke her hip at her daughter's property. Her daughter just built a mansion very close by. She wasn't taken to the hospital right away. As it turned out, she had a broken hip. She got taken into emergency surgery. She came out, and now 3 times a week and more, there are physical therapy people that are coming and going inside my mother's house.
Okay.
During the pandemic, it's, you know, a little alarming, but we want her to have.
Is your care. Is your mother there, living there?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
So she's
on property. Now it gets interesting, and that is, let's say you evict her, okay? Because you can toss her, maybe. And for the purpose of the reason is that. It's a danger to you with COVID. Now, what are the defenses? She can stay away from those people that come in to give your mom, to give this woman physical therapy. Demand that all precautions are taken. And assuming all of that is being done, that's not going to fly for an eviction.
It is. Yeah, it's all being done.
Then there's not much. What is your question?
So we truly would like to get her out because we're not.
It's rent control. Here's what you get to do, Pam. You get to talk to a landlord-tenant attorney, an expert in evictions, and they do nothing but, because the way you describe it is these are difficult, navigable waters. I mean, it's possible. There are defenses. It's rent control. You know, the fact that she's disabled and is not even cognitive really has nothing to do with it. It's how really? Dangerous is it? The physical therapists are coming in, COVID, that's all the issue. So it's definitely time for a landlord tenant. Good question, by the way.
Yeah.
And, you're very well spoken. I must tell you, good job. I don't often get that bagel in your mouth or not. Bob. Hello, Bob. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was involved in a little altercation in which I was attacked by a total stranger who was bigger, younger, and stronger than me. Anyway, he is now up for charges on elder abuse or elder assault. I'm not sure which one. But I'm trying to find out who this guy is. And mainly because I just want, you know, where he lives at and what he does, mainly because I just want to avoid him. I don't want to run into him. But the all I can get out of a district attorney is a guy's name. I'm just wondering if there's any way if I can get more information out of him.
Well, if you have his name, you can probably find him. But what I would do is...
I've tried that.
Okay.
You know, I've gone.
So you want to ask, I think what happens is the police normally don't give a name. Now, if he's going to be charged, you clearly are going to know who he is because they're going to bring you in.
Oh, I do. I have the name, but I would like to find out where he, you know, like if he works at McDonald's or something.
I don't think they're going to tell you that.
I don't anyway.
I don't think they're going to tell you that. They're not going to tell you that because what's the reason that they would tell you? So you can, you can go back. I mean,
so
you can sue. So you want to stay away from him? Yeah, no, I know. I know. And I, you know what? I don't know the answer. You want to avoid him and the police. I mean, there is going to an attorney and getting a court order because you're fearful. I talked to an elder abuse attorney and that's where you want to go. Go to handleonthelaw.com. We have those and just ask the question. They'll answer the question. That's an easy one. You don't have to retain anybody and just the question being answered. All right. As we end the show, I want to point out again, that if you're on hold, you're waiting for me to answer your phone calls, I will stay put. And for those of you that are going to call in and continue, because I'm going to continue this after the show off the air, even if the line is busy, just call back in 5 minutes or 8 minutes or 10 minutes, because I go through these phone calls very quickly and I hang up on people quickly, I might add. And we don't have commercials or breaks, so you can imagine I'm going through it pretty quickly. Here we go. 800-520-1534. 800-520-1534. This is Handle on the Law.